Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to this Saturday evening here on BBC Radio 3. The time now is 6:30. Time for Opera on 3 from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. It's presented by Martin Handley.
Tonight, we enter the world of one of the most popular operas in the entire repertoire, Bizet's Carmen. And that world may not be exactly what you're expecting. Hello and welcome to the Royal Opera House Covent Garden for a performance of a new production, for Covent Garden anyway, by the boss of the Komische Oper in Berlin, Barry Kosky, who sees this piece as utterly French. There are no big Spanish hooped earrings on show tonight. The conductor is Jakub Hruša, who I hope you'll think really draws out every subtlety from the score, a score which has more music than we usually hear. More about that in a bit. The cast is led by Russian mezzo Anna Goryachova, making her Royal Opera House debut, with the tenor Francesco Meli as her completely smitten lover, Don Jose. Baritone Kostas Smoriginas as the egocentric bullfighter Escamillo, and another Russian making her Royal Opera House debut, soprano Christina Mkhitaryan as Jose's childhood friend, Michaela. The Royal Opera House Chorus, who have some great music to sing, Chorus Director William Spalding, and the Royal Opera House Orchestra, who revel in this opera, are led by Sergei Levitin. Now, if you'd like to see what the production looks like, and it's full of surprises, then do go to the Opera on 3 page of the BBC Radio 3 website, where you'll also find a full synopsis of the plot to help you keep across what's going on. Well, with me in our box high up above the orchestra is the French music expert from Bristol University, Sarah Hibbard. Sarah, welcome.
Hello.
We both saw the dress rehearsal and we were both very taken with this production. What did you particularly like about it?
Yeah, it was a great production. I really enjoyed the way in which the different theatrical traditions that influenced Bizet are brought to the surface. So we have things like operetta, café concert, and then these are traced through into the 20th century as well, so resonances with Berlin cabaret from the 1920s, Hollywood musical.
When do you think it's set? When are the costumes? Do you think that it's also going to be 50s or something like that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, definitely. It sort of has a flavour of mid-20th century. Sometimes it feels a bit more like a bit earlier, but sometimes the 50s, 60s.
And unlike many productions of Carmen, there aren't a lot of props around. I mean, there's a very long rope to which various people are attached when they're arrested or whatever. And there are rose petals, and there's a knife, of course, but that's about it.
Right, and actually what dominates the stage is this extraordinary staircase, which sort of brings to mind Busby Berkeley musicals, perhaps, but also the setting of the bull ring as well, and it's very effective.
It is, and in sound-wise as well, because it does throw the sound forward. And as you said earlier, we can see everything that's going on stage very easily.
Exactly. We have the chorus members and soloists running up and down the stairs and seeing exactly what's going on. Glances they exchange with each other and sort of movements of people across the stage.
We've also got quite a lot of extra music. For example, in the first act, we've got Corporal Morales' Offenbach-esque vaudeville aria.
That's right. The production is a sort of palimpsest of sort of earlier versions or sort of layers in the creative process. And that aria from Morales is a sort of comic sort of parody of fidelity. So it's kind of very pertinent to the drama. It sets it up nicely.
And he kind of does it with a sort of hat and cane. It's very much that sort of feel, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes, so very much with this idea of sort of cabaret and Hollywood right at the beginning.
And then when we get to Carmen's famous Habanera, that's a rather different version.
Indeed, the Habanera itself stops a little bit earlier than we're expecting, and then we hear the tarantella that was the original song that went in that position in the opera that Bizet then discarded in favour of the Habanera.
So if you're listening at home, that really will pull you up short. That really is very different. Now, one unexpected member of the cast, I should mention, and that's the actress Claude Dedemo, whose voice we hear basically narrating the opera rather than the singers speaking dialogue. Does that work for you?
I really like it, because one of the problems in performing opera comique is that you don't have recitatives, you have spoken dialogue, and that can be a problem when you have non-native French speakers and just keeping the acting going along. So this narration I really enjoyed, and it's inspired by the Mérimée novella on which the opera is based, where you also have a narration, only this time we have it from Carmen's point of view rather than Don José.
You've talked about Carmen's point of view. Just quickly give us your thumbnail sketch of the character of Carmen herself, as you see her, Sarah.
Okay. She's a gypsy working in the cigarette factory in Seville. She loves her freedom. She lives intensely in the moment. She doesn't like to be constrained. And she's really at the heart of the opera, the heart of the first two acts, where she's very aware, self-aware of her charms and her power and influence over other people. And we sort of see her luring Don Jose.
Absolutely. And, of course, we're already going to meet Escamillo and Micaela, the other two main characters. Micaela, who, of course, was part of Don Jose's family and comes bearing a message from his mother. And she's the sort of opposite, if you like, of Carmen, isn't she?
That's right. We have this very tender scene between Micaela and Don Jose before Carmen then manages to lure Jose away into a more dangerous direction.
We'll talk more in the interval. So now, as the music begins, we see the broad, steep set of steps which Sarah was talking about and which form the backdrop to all the action tonight. And quite soon, at the top of them, appears a diminutive figure in a pink matador's outfit. It's Carmen. Well, Jakub Prusser is already in the Royal Opera House pit, and he's now all ready to conduct Acts 1 and 2 of Bizet's Carmen.
Femme soit belle, disent les Espagnols. Il faut qu'elle réunisse 36, ou, si l'on veut, qu'on puisse la définir au moyen de 10 adjectifs applicables chacun à 3 parties de sa personne. 3 choses blanches: peau, dents et mains. 3 choses noires: yeux, sourcils et paupières. 3 choses rouges: lèvres, joues et ongles. 3 choses longues: corps, cheveux et mains. 3 choses courtes: dents, oreilles et pieds. 3 choses larges: sein, front et espace entre les yeux. 3 choses étroites: bouche, les deux, taille et cuisse. 3 choses vastes: doigts, cheveux et lèvres. 3 choses petites: mamelon, nez et tête. une place à Séville. À droite, la porte de la manufacture de tabac. Au milieu, une fontaine. Au fond, un pont praticable. À gauche, le corps de garde. Au lever du rideau, le brigadier Morales et les soldats étaient groupés devant le corps de garde. Des passants allaient et venaient sur la place.
Oh! attention, tes ombres. Voici venir vieil époux, insoupçonneux, mine jalouse. Il tient au bras sa jeune épouse, l'amour sans doute n'est pas loin, il va s'en dire de quelque quoi. L'amour sans doute n'est pas loin, il va s'en dire de quelque part.
Don José Lizarra Benguin. Il voulait qu'il devienne prêtre. Et ils le firent étudier. Mais il n'en profita guère. Il aimait trop jouer à la paume. Un jour, alors qu'il avait gagné, un gars de la lava lui chercha querelle. Il eut encore l'avantage, mais fut obligé de quitter le pays. Il se fit soldat. Il n'avait plus de père. Sa mère le suivit et s'installa à 10 lieues de Séville. S'appelait Don José Lizarra Benguin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amen.
Michaela revint au soir chercher Don José. C'était une orpheline dont la mère de Don José s'était occupée. Maintenant, elle avait 17 ans. Don José fut surpris de la voir à Séville, seule et si loin de la maison.
Parle-moi de ma mère. Parle-moi de ma mère.
J'en prie tes sans parle fidèle et messagère. Cette lettre,
une lettre,
écrise en vue de Jean, me rajoute dans votre traitement. Et puis,
et puis,
et puis,
Continue à te bien conduire, mon enfant. L'on t'a promis de te faire maréchal des logis. Peut-être alors pourras-tu quitter le service, te faire donner une petite place et revenir près de moi. Je commence à me faire bien vieille. Tu reviendrais près de moi et tu te marierais. Nous n'aurions pas, je pense, grand-peine à te trouver une femme, et je sais bien quant à moi celle que je te conseillerais de choisir. C'est tout justement celle qui te porte ma lettre. Il n'y en a pas de plus sage ni de plus gentil.
Monsieur,
Don José lui attacha ses deux jolies mains. Carmen devait aller en prison pour avoir dessiné au couteau des croix de Saint-André sur le visage de sa camarade. Elle lui raconta qu'elle était née à Etchala. Des bohémiens l'avaient emmenée à Séville. Elle travaillait à la manufacture pour gagner de quoi retourner en Navarre, près de sa pauvre mère qui n'avait qu'elle pour soutien. Oui, elle était bohémienne. Ses yeux, sa bouche, son teint, tout prouvait qu'elle était bohémienne. Carmen expliqua à Don José qu'il allait faire ce qu'elle lui demandait, qu'il le ferait parce qu'il l'aimait. Oui, tu m'aimes, ne le nie pas. Je m'y connais. Tes regards, la manière dont tu me parles, cette fleur que tu as gardée, tu peux la jeter maintenant, ça n'y fera rien. Elle est restée assez de temps sur ton cœur. Le mal est fait. Le charme a opéré. Don José lui interdit de lui parler comme cela. Très bien, répondit Carmen. Si tu me défends de parler, je ne parlerai plus. Mais cela ne veut pas dire que je ne chanterai plus.
Je passe sur tes officiers qui m'aiment. Je suis comme un enivre, si je cède, si je m'enivre. Ta promesse, tu la tiendras, oh, si je t'aime par mal, car mal tu m'aimeras.
Sous la promesse,
Chez Lias Bastia, une taverne. Au lever du rideau, Carmen, Frasquita et Mercedes étaient à table avec les officiers. Deux bohémiennes dansaient, accompagnées par des bohémiens qui raclaient de la guitare et jouaient du tambour de basse. Il y avait un mois que Carmen avait fait la connaissance de Don José. Depuis, Don José, qui avait laissé Carmen s'échapper alors qu'il devait la conduire en prison, s'est fait dégrader et emprisonner. Il était sorti de prison la veille seulement. Escamillo, un torero qui s'était distingué aux dernières courses de Grenade et promettait d'égaler la gloire de Montes et de Pepeillo.
Le cirque pleure son,
Escamillo se trouvait près de Carmen. Dis-moi ton nom. Et la première fois que je frapperai le taureau, ce sera ton nom que je prononcerai. Carmen lui répondit que son nom était Carmencita, mais que s'il préférait, il pouvait l'appeler Carmen. Eh bien, Carmen, ou la Carmencita, si je m'avisais de t'aimer et de vouloir être aimée de toi, qu'est-ce que tu me répondrais? Carmen répondit, je dirais que tu peux m'aimer tout à ton aise, mais quant à être aimée de moi pour le moment, il n'y faut pas songer. Ah, répondit Escamillo. Alors j'attendrai et je me contenterai d'espérer. Carmen sourit. Il n'est pas défendu d'attendre. Et il est toujours agréable d'espérer. Les deux contrebandiers, Dan Cairo et Remendado, arrivèrent à la taverne. Dan Cairo raconta leur dernier coup. Nous arrivons de Gibraltar. Nous avons arrangé avec un patron de navire l'embarquement de marchandises anglaises. Nous irons les attendre près de la côte, nous en cacherons une partie dans la montagne et nous ferons passer le reste. C'est de vous trois que nous avons besoin. Vous allez partir avec nous. Carmen rit. Pourquoi faire? Pour vous aider à porter des ballots? Ah non, répondit Remendado. Ça ne serait pas distingué. Nous avons besoin de vous pour autre chose.
Savons en tête une affaire. Elle est admirable, ma chère. Mais nous avons besoin de vous.
Oui, nous avons besoin de vous.
De vous,
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 de vous, de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de
vous,
de
vous,
de
vous,
de vous,
de vous, de vous,
de
vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
de vous,
bon,
c'est ma foi
d'avoir
les femmes avec
moi.
Et sans elles,
les
coups de bête,
on est
déjà
bien, bien.
Passons-nous,
jamais les
dégâts, sans-nous,
jamais
les dégâts. Ne
voudrez-vous
pas de cet
avis?
Si fait,
je suis dans
cet avis.
Ne
voudrez-vous pas
de cet
avis?
Si fait, je suis dans
cet avis.
Si fait,
je suis dans
cet avis.
Carmen décida de rester pour la nuit et de ne rejoindre les contrebandiers que le lendemain. « Qui attends-tu donc ?» lui demanda Frasquita. « Un pauvre diable de soldat qui m'a rendu service, » répondit Carmen. « C'est un dragon, » dit Mercedes. « Et un beau dragon, » renchérit Frasquita. « Tu devrais décider ton dragon à venir avec toi et à se joindre à nous, » dit Dan Cairo. « Pourquoi l'aimes-tu ? » ?»« Parce qu'il est joli garçon et qu'il me plaît, » répondit Carmen. Carmen attendait la venue de Don José. Il arriva à la taverne comme elle s'y attendait. Ils m'ont emprisonné. Ils m'ont ôté mon grade, mais cela m'est égal. Parce que je t'aime, parce que je t'adore, implora Don José. Ah, que je t'aime, Carmen, que je t'aime. Je l'espère bien, répondit Carmen.
Pour la paix. Thank you. Adieu! Officier,
Don José stands stock still in the middle of the crowd of smugglers and gypsies as they sing and dance of the freedom they'll find in the mountains. He may have deserted, he may adore Carmen, but he looks utterly out of place, alone, bereft. The end of Act Two of Bizet's opera Carmen in this new production by Barry Kosky at the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, conducted by Jakub Hruša. Carmen is Anna Goriachova and Francesco Meli, Don José. Kostas Moriginas sings Escamillo and Cristina Mkhitaryan, Mikaela. Zuniga is David Saw and Morales, Jula Nodge, who's a member of the Yetta Parker Young Artist Programme, as is Jacqueline Stucker, who sings Carmen's friend Frasquita, and Aigul Ahmedchina, who's Mercedes. The two smugglers, Dan Cairo and Remendado, are sung by Pierre Doyen and Jean-Paul Fouchecourt, with the Royal Opera Chorus, Chorus Director William Spalding, and the Royal Opera House Orchestra, led by Sergei Levitin. Well, French opera expert Sarah Hibbert is watching with me. This is an amazing score, Sarah, and it's fascinating to hear the extra bits and pieces. Remind us about where Bizet's opera came from in terms of his training and what he'd written and done before.
Well, it was commissioned in 1872, but before that he trained at the Conservatoire, had lessons there from the age of 9. He was a sort of protege of Gounod. He won the Prix de Rome, spent 3 years in Italy, so had a lot of sort of training, a lot of background. And he'd written several operas that had all been staged but not been terribly successful by 1872. So the Pêcheur des Perles, La Jolie Fille de Perth, the one-act Jamila, all of which had a sort of exotic element in them as well.
Well, exactly. Spain and exoticism generally, I mean, you mentioned Pearl Fishers, set in Sri Lanka as it now would be, was big in French music at the time. What's your view of Bizet's attempted Spanish flavouring in Carmen?
Well, it seems to take two forms. At one level, he's using a whole series of very familiar tropes of creating an exotic world. Lots of use of chromaticism, modal inflections, the kinds of coloristic timbres we have in the orchestra. So all of that is a very familiar sound.
It's all kind of seen through a sort of French palm court, though, isn't it?
That's right, that's right. And on the other side of it, there are these numbers that seem to have been inspired by and borrowed from Spanish sources. So the habanera in the first act that we mentioned earlier seems to have been picked up from a Spanish composer called Sebastián Iradier. Possibly Bizet heard it in one of the café concerts that he frequented. It actually has Cuban roots, so Iradier himself had sort of collected it on his travels in Latin America, and then it's already mediated by the time Bizet gets his hands on it.
Well, before the dress rehearsal, I managed to sit down briefly with director Barry Kosky to ask him for his thoughts on the opera and what he's trying to achieve in his production.
The first misconception is that it's a Spanish opera about Spain, set in Spain, a sort of hot, baking Mediterranean landscape with, you know, horny gypsies and sweaty bullfighters. And that's about as far away from the actual score as you can imagine. The opera is a French opera, in fact an opera comique, from the first bar, not to the last bar, because in the last bar it turns into French verismo, but it's very important to stress that because it comes out of a French musical and theatrical tradition.
Yes, I mean, when we talk about Carmen, and I've heard you talk about Carmen as sort of coming from La Belle Hélène in a way, so that's absolutely from the French opera comic.
Yes, I mean, I think that you've got to understand that Carmen would have only been possible as a character on the stage if Offenbach had written these extraordinary female roles, La Belle Hélène and Gerolstein. They are very, very modern, extraordinary, multifaceted female parts, which were not the sort of mode for the spoken theatre or the opera. And Offenbach's major librettists, Meliak and Halevi, were also the writers and friends of Bizet. So there's a lot of Offenbach in the text, and there's a lot of Offenbach in the music. And I think this is not often stated because I think that everyone assumes this is a doom-laden sort of piece about destiny and sex and death, of which it is, but it's how you present that on stage that the question.
Give us a little thumbnail sketch of the four main characters.
Well, in our production, the story is seen through Carmen's perspective, through her eyes, And this is very important because she presents, in a way, the last chapter of her life as a sort of hallucinatory revue on the stage. I think for me, the other characters in the opera are types. Bullfighter, smuggler, soldier, even Don Jose, for all his fantastic music, I think is there to serve a function for the story of Carmen. Lots of directors have seen the piece through his eyes, which you can do, but I want to see the piece through her eyes. For me, the idea of seeing it through Carmen's perspective then led me to the idea of how to deal with the spoken dialogue, which of course is a problem if you don't have an all French-speaking cast. You need the spoken dialogue because the piece was written to be interrupted, and these recits that were written after Bizet's death are terrible and very inauthentic. So you need, the music needs to stop and start. So, and it's very important that the audience hear the story, because if you just do the music without any text, it doesn't make any sense. So I decided that Carmen, the dialogue would be then rewritten from the original Mérimée and the original libretto in as the voice of Carmen, who tells her story to the audience.
You've got some extra music in the piece, which is always exciting.
We've got extra music. We've got music that's normally cut.
Okay.
I don't think that qualifies as extra music.
Well,
I think it's original music.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he didn't always cut it. There's about 30% extra music in the production, which you don't normally hear, either because it's music that is written to accompany the spoken dialogue. Yeah. So it's wonderful three interludes that you don't ever hear. You get to hear the Morales aria at the very beginning of the piece, which is an aria that is often cut, well, most of the time is cut, which is a very important aria because it sets up the themes of the piece and also the Offenbach style of the piece and the irony in the piece. You get to hear the original version of the Habanera, because the Habanera is not what Bizet wrote at the beginning. So you get to see the Habanera and the aria that was originally beautiful, also an operetta aria. And
the end of the piece?
More controversially, the end of the piece, where you get to hear for the first time what Bizet originally wanted for the end. The management of the Opera Comique made him change the ending. We are used to having Don Jose sobbing over the body of Carmen, and it's a strange ending. It's always struck me as being not quite right, because suddenly the whole opera twists about him, and you're meant to feel sorry for him, which I find very hard to do, and it becomes his story. And I always thought something was wrong. And then I found out when we were working on this production in Frankfurt that, in fact, the original ending was not that. It's another page of music. And the Carmen motif comes back very strongly. And the piece finishes with a very strange chord progression and then goes into a diminuendo and finishes in pianissimo. So it's a quite radically different ending and never heard before. So we're very excited that London audiences will hear that for the first time.
You talk about Carmen and Don Giovanni being two sides of the same coin. Can you just say a few words about that?
Well, I think they're in the sense that they are both part Dionysian figures and two characters where, you know, Eros and Thanatos, you know, the erotic and death, are part of their DNA. And they're both very undefinable characters. It's very difficult to describe both these characters in one sentence. It really, they're chameleons. They change depending on who's on stage. And that's why they're very hard to play. You remember lots of Don Giovanni's by the Donna Annas and the Leporellos, and you remember lots of Carmen's by the Don Jose's and the Michaelas, because the Carmen and the Don Giovanni's are very hard to play what they represent. When you find the right performance, it works fantastically. But this idea of a character in which people project all their anxieties on and phobias and fears, it's very hard to play on the stage because, you know, you can't play a projection, so you have to play someone that's three-dimensional, but that's the challenge. But they're very different. I don't think Carmen and Don Giovanni are brother and sister. I think that they're the two sides of that opera coin.
Just one final one, which is, you know, the very physical production, and you feel that this is very important in, obviously, a piece like Carmen, which has got so many dance rhythms through it.
Well, I think that physicality is important in any opera production because it's music theatre. So if people don't want physicality, I always think it's hilarious when people say, oh, your productions are very theatrical, or Barry, your productions are very, there's a lot of movement. And you go, well, I think there's a lot of movement. There's just, you know, there's drama. And I don't do concerts in frock. So it's very important for me always that the body and the voice are working as a sort of virtuosic instrument. However, in the case of Carmen, there is so much dance, and she dances not just as a sort of fill-in. The dance is seen as a form of not just seduction, but a form of warfare in the piece. So movement comes from the rhythms of the piece. There's a lot of dance rhythms. I'd say half the piece is dance rhythm. And so that's very important. The dance is a very important integral production of the Carmen production and not just something that some gypsies do in Lilias Pastus Tavern for five minutes and everyone claps and goes, that's great. There's more to it than that.
Barry Kosky, director of this Royal Opera House production of Bizet's Carmen. Do have a look at the Opera on 3 page of the BBC Radio 3 website. There you can see photographs of the production and, of course, read a full synopsis, which will help you keep abreast of the story. Sarah, it's one of the world's most popular operas now, if not the most popular. Why was the first production in Paris received so badly, the only one that poor Bizet saw?
Well, partly this has been overstated a little bit, so it wasn't a complete failure. There were 45 performances in the first run, which is not bad going. But the problem was seen as it wasn't the kind of show that audiences at the Opéra Comique were expecting. So fairly conservative audiences expecting to see their values reflected on the stage.
Yes, I think the boss of the Opéra Comique kind of begged Bizet not to have a death at the end of it.
That's right. Not only do you have lots of women running around smoking and fighting, you have Carmen dying on stage at the end of the opera. Not at all what Opéra Comique audiences wanted.
So are these ideas about class and about women and ethnicity being put on stage that was really very unusual?
It was unusual to see this at one of the big opera houses. The commercial theatres traded in this sort of thing. It was unusual to have it at the Opéra Comique. It was also a tricky time in France, the 1870s, just after the Franco-Prussian War, France having been humiliated, French identity feeling rather fragile, and looking actually for a new kind of French opera that was something distinct and modern.
We've got Act 3 to go now. We're up in the mountains for the first scene with the smugglers, and then we're down in the bull ring, really, for the final deathly scene. After the death, after Carmen is killed, we get this original version of the very final music. What does that do for you?
Well, that's right. Barry Kosky mentioned that this is the version that Bizet wanted.
And the Opéra Comique didn't.
Right. Yeah. It's not quite clear that that's the case. All sorts of changes made during rehearsals, I think, that perhaps where he sort of adapted. But nevertheless, it's rather an abrupt end, I think. We're used to having a sort of fairly lengthy scene with Don Jose after he's stabbed Carmen, which in a way gives us time to come to terms with what's happened, the music and the drama propelling us to this kind of inevitable moment when we know he's going to kill her. And it happens rather quickly, so he's right that the focus stays on Carmen.
It does, and it certainly does in this production, because we have this visual coup de théâtre at the end where Carmen sits up and winks at us.
That's right. Yeah, very much in the spirit of the production, I think.
It's Carmen's story. It's seen through the eyes of Carmen. Is this all in her head, I suppose?
Right, right. And also, I suppose, something of the sort of irony as well that's kind of threaded through it. So Barry Kosky talks about the influence of Offenbach and kind of satire and parody, which informs his production. And I suppose that also feeds into it. And again, it feels rather a sort of abrupt. You sort of snap out of this this moment where you should, where normally you're just immersed in the drama and
you don't emotion. Normally expect wit and verismo to come eyeball to eyeball, but they kind of do. Yeah.
That's right. There's a clash of two very different theatrical traditions at that very moment.
We'll see what the reaction of the audience is this evening. Sarah, thanks very much for your insights and your company this evening.
Thank you.
Sarah Hibbert, French opera specialist from Bristol University. The curtain rises in silence at the start of Act 3, and we see everyone asleep on the mountainside. Well, the steps. And a dancer begins to move and stamps his feet to wake everyone up. They sit and watch, and there's a palpable sense of menace. So now, here comes Jakob Prusa into the Covent Garden pit and brings the Royal Opera House Orchestra to its feet. So now, the final act of Bizet's Carmen.
site sauvage dans la montagne. Au lever du rideau, quelques contrebandiers étaient couchés ça et là, enveloppés dans leurs manteaux. Carmen de lui pardonner pour lui avoir parlé trop durement lors de leur voyage dans les montagnes. Elle refusa de lui pardonner Il lui demanda si elle l'aimait encore. Carmen répondit : Ce qui est sûr, c'est que je t'aime beaucoup moins qu'autrefois. Et que si tu continues à t'y prendre de cette façon, je finirai par ne plus t'aimer du tout. Je ne veux pas être tourmentée, ni surtout commandée. Ce que je veux, c'est être libre et faire ce qui me plaît. J'ai vu plusieurs fois dans les cartes que nous devions finir ensemble.
Je vois un jeune amoureux.
Contrebandier attendait dans l'obscurité le signal pour pouvoir partir. Dan Cairo et Remendado retournèrent informer Carmen que trois douaniers gardaient la brèche et qu'ils la gardaient bien. Les noms des trois douaniers étaient Eusebio, Pérez et Bartolomeo.
Carmen rit. N'ayez pas peur, Dan Cairo. Nous vous en répondrons de vos trois douaniers.
Oh, Que viens-tu faire ici? Thank you. difficult times.
Thank you. Je veux vivre. Thank you.
José stabs Carmen at the foot of the towering steps, stumbles up them and disappears. And then, as the music ends, Carmen sits up, shrugs and winks at us. This really has been her story. The end of Bizet's opera Carmen in this new production at the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, directed by Barry Kosky. All the principals having a bow together, led, of course, by Carmen and Don José, Anna Goryachova and Francesco Melli. And everyone clears off the stage. Tour de force for Carmen. On come the six dancers in their Matador uniforms. A splash of colour, otherwise very much black and white stage. Tremendous energy throughout the performance. And as the chorus come on, I must just mention the voice of Carmen throughout the evening. The unseen Carmen, Claude de Demo. The chorus. And their chorus director, William Spalding, coming up from the back. These steep steps, hard to negotiate. William Spalding turns and applauds his chorus and turns to the front. They say all black and white and grey costumes. Middle of the 20th century, 1950s. Back come the six dancers, pink and blue, mauve and grey, orange stockings, taking another bow on the steps. Very dapper remendado, Jean-Paul Fouchécourt. Bounding on the other smuggler, Dan Caiero, Pierre Doyen. Mercedes Aigle Achmachina, member of the Yetta Parker Young Artist Programme, as is Jacqueline Stucker Frasquita. Very much a team, those two. And here's Costas Moriginas Escamillo, now in a gold costume, but still with his pink stockings. And all in white, Michaela Cristina Mkhitaryan, making her debut in this production at the Royal Opera House. And Don José himself, Francesco Melli, applauds the orchestra and the rest of the company. And striding onto the stage, Anna Goryachova, our Carmen. This is also her debut at the Royal Opera House. Tremendously physical performance. Those kisses at the rest of the company. One terrifying moment where she dashes down the steps at 130 miles an hour, and you fear for her, but she always negotiates them absolutely faultlessly. And goes to fetch the conductor, Jakub Hruša, who goes to the pit and drums his orchestra to its feet. And thanks particularly the leader, Sergei Levitin. And Jakub Hruša joins the rest of the company and insists that chorus master William Spalding join in the run to the front of the stage. This is an astonishing piece of music theatre. You think you know it, but particularly in this version, with the music we normally don't hear. There's always something to grab you. It's edge-of-the-seat stuff. If you've missed some this evening, do have a listen whenever suits you over the next 30 days or nights. Just head for the Opera on 3 page of the BBC Radio 3 website. But as the principals dash the front once more, and Jakub Hruša indicates his orchestra from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, time for me to hand you on to Broadcasting House and to wish you a very good night.
Opera on 3 from the Royal Opera House Covent Garden was presented there by Martin Handley. Well, next Saturday evening you can hear Richard Strauss's psychopathic blockbuster Elektra. That's from the Metropolitan Opera in New York. It's conducted by Yannick Nézet-Séguin with Christine Gurker in the title role. And that begins at 6:30 next Saturday evening. Here and Now is next tonight on Radio 3. Before that, we have time for an extract from Richard Strauss's other one-act shocker. This is The Dance of the Seven Veils from Salome.
Thank you.
Of the Seven Veils from Zalame by Richard Strauss. The City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra was conducted by Andris Nelsons. And as I mentioned, you can hear Strauss's Elektra as our opera on three from the Met in New York next Saturday evening at 6:30.